This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live and a moment in time where we present you with a personal story, some compelling personal story, and a love letter to follow, because in every life's experience, if you think about it for a minute, are the seeds of a love letter to someone. You feel gratitude, you feel appreciation, you have a memory that you'd like to share or that you should share. And why take it to the grave? Why not write it and stamp it and mail it and make somebody else's life richer for it? So with that, I'm going to go to our guest today, who is Jean O. And Jean is a Jefferson Award winner and has come from one world and gone to another in the most interesting way and provides something absolutely beautiful. So Jean, I'm just going to turn it over to you and say, please just talk about your journey.
Great. Well, my name is Jean, and I'm currently a bike shop owner, simply selling bicycles without engines or anything, right there in Alameda, called Alameda Bicycle. I got to know Janet because we won the Jefferson Award for a program we do. We do a lot of events to make sure that people don't just buy a bike and leave it in their garage forever.
Now, excuse me, you say we. So right. Who are you doing this with? I mean, I just...
Well,
you
I do this soul. I do this with all my coworkers.
I see. Okay, you know, in the bike shop.
Right.
Okay.
We consider our coworker staff because we really respect them for their opinions as much as their physical activity.
I understand.
And so we do it as a team.
Okay. So it's a program you started, but you now have this team of other people who are...
Absolutely. Okay. Well, everything we do together in our shop.
And so tell us about you and corporate America. I know that's a large for a short amount of time, but
yeah,
if you could.
You know, I guess the best place to start would be a class that I took my senior year at UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I was attending the Haas School of Business, which is a undergraduate and, of course, a graduate business school program. And there's a required class called Business Association 150, talking about business ethics. Wonderful. It's a required class. Everyone has to take it. And it talks about the good and bad of capitalism. Well, it turns out that we found out very quickly that it became just a church for capitalism, talking about how wonderful these people like Adam Smith and the redemptive character of J.P. Morgan and Rockefeller are, and how they're kings of capital because they are just great people. I learned very quickly that my fellow students who also attended these classes kind of saw a different perspective and different light, and they looked at it with very glossy eyes of saying, this is where I want to be, this is what I want to do.
So you were attracted to that description.
Oh, the amount of magnetism of money that that is so quick and evident to see at that business environment really did magnetize everyone, including myself. And I found myself struggling very quickly with the idea that I was drawn to the money, and yet I was repelled by the people that I would have to call my friends in order to get that success. And so very quickly, I decided that this is not where I wanted to go. Took a detour to work in Hollywood for a bit, called That 70s Show. Production assistant there, glorified servant, really. But I learned very quickly that I didn't want to join a corporate world, but I also learned I didn't want to join the glossy Hollywood world, where I found myself looking in the mirror more often than I probably ever had in my life. So
you got a cute reflection, at least.
Well, I learned very quickly that what I wanted to do more than anything else was to create an environment where I was just happy to be in every day.
That's wonderful. And shouldn't we all be there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
so let me ask you something. Just break for 1 minute. You talked earlier, just to me, about your life, and you were planning parties and what.
Right.
Would that be relevant for you to tell us about how that went?
Well, sure. I guess to kind of take another detour back in the past, back in college, I used to throw parties.
Oh, I see.
I was a party promoter. Mm-hmm. And we worked with a couple of top stations called KMEL and at that time KSOL.
To announce the parties on those stations?
Right. We would hire the DJs and do advertising in there. And it's very interesting, actually, to kind of take a step back, and I guess we'll go back to the future. But in 1996, there was the FCC Telecommunications Act.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I do want to talk about today. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 was the most groundbreaking act that we've had since the Telecommunications Act of 1934. Now, what this did was it allowed one company to own 40% of everything in a local media area. Now, we're talking radio, we're talking TV, we're talking cable, we're talking the infrastructure of the cable, we're talking everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed three companies to own 90% of all of the media in a local area. Now, mm-hmm. they since, of course, scaled it down because us as the public, we actually do have power. But to imagine that this scope that they were able to pass, and of course, it's always wolf in sheep clothing. They say it was done to increase competition. Well, why not increase competition by allowing companies to go all over the country? Oh, it sounds wonderful. But as we know, politicians aren't dumb like we always say they are. They are simply bought out. What this allowed, and in my life...
But you're saying that's too much power in too few people's hands?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, if you're looking at, for example, what happened to me, you look at KSOL and KMEL, two urban radio stations, you know, top 100 urban radio. So you're going to have some commercial airplay all the time, but you're also going to have these great local artists that come into the mix. And what you saw right away was these local artists gone. National playlist begins.
Oh, so it, So it limits creativity.
It destroys creativity.
Yes,
it not only destroys creativity,
nice. Yeah.
but it compels and forces artists that want to express themselves to fit into the playlist.
Yes, to play some other game that,
Absolutely. And we saw these names all over the place. AMFM becomes green, Evergreen becomes Clear Channel, and it just...
Yes, I understand.
The exponential growth of these companies, for example, Clear Channel before 1996 had, I believe, 24 stations. They now have 1,200.
Wow. So what did that do to you personally? How did you bow out of this world?
Well, you know...
At that point.
At that point, I didn't understand the macro implications of it. For me, it was just a matter of seeing the music degrade, seeing the quality of the DJs mute their personality in order to stay and keep their jobs.
A lowest common denominator kind of problem.
Right. Uh-huh. For me, it was just a matter of seeing the quality degrade. But now that I'm older, I'm able to see the overall macro implications. And what you're seeing really is a watering down of expression.
Yes.
And if you're talking about First Amendment rights, it's done. And it's to this
also,
day.
Also, when things get watered down, we're not enriched by it.
Well, that's where it goes back to the personal element of love letters, in that what's happening is the local voice, individual voice in all of us is getting muted.
Oh, you're so right.
Because the national voice or the corporate voice is taking over. And that kind of goes right back to why I decided to take over my parents' bicycle shop.
Oh, that's okay. So you were raised in that more intimate.
Well, you know, it's
kind of
it's,
a business.
Yeah, it's interesting. My mother owned Alameda Bicycle since 1987, and she kept it always as a family. Now, her philosophy was always to treat her staff as family, whether it means cooking dinner for them, giving them loans when needed, or giving them a good yelling or a smack in the back if needed. She treated her staff like family. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I was attracted to when I took over. And it's something that I really believe in strongly, in that the local business that I run, is my small way of making sure that an individual voice stays in the community and really enriches our community.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been operating Alameda Bicycle since 2002.
Oh, so that's a while already. So I'm just interested in what your cutoff point was. How did you say goodbye to one? Or was that something you just did in your heart and head personally? Or did you...
I think all of us living in America, it's impossible to say that I cut off corporate interests or my own greed or my own desire for greater things completely. It's ingrained in us.
Oh, no, I wasn't even asking that. Because the better you do, actually, the more you can provide for others.
Right.
I mean, the more you have, the more you can give. There is some truth to that.
Well, if you're asking when I decided to cut off my ambitions for the corporate world.
Yes, personally. And how did you do that?
Yeah, again, it's not a struggle, I think, that ever escapes me. But I was able to make the decision to at least get that out of my head when I took over the bike shop. And I decided that it was finally my opportunity to create my own world.
Okay, so then tell us how you did that and what you're doing in your world. It's so nice.
Yeah, well, with my mother and I, we decided to do something called ownership carry. I had to make sure that if I were to take over the bike shop, it would be done my way. And my mom understands that. So when I took over in 2002, the big thing I wanted to do was to make sure that I had staff that I really wanted to just be with every day. Honest people, good people, and so that we can enrich each other. And the idea is really simple. That is that if we can make sure we have an environment that we enjoy, then we're going to naturally spread that goodwill to all of our clients that walk through our door.
Oh, sure. That's contagious.
Absolutely.
Joy is contagious.
And they, in turn, will go ahead and spread that goodwill to their family and their friends and their coworkers. So
yes.
It's a very simple philosophy but it's something that that we believe very strongly at Alameda Bible School.
Yes, joy and compassion and all those kind of things are really form a contagion of their own.
Yeah,
spread and spread. So what do you do with these children who come to you? I like this program.
Well, what we decided was that if we were going to have an environment where it's all about the people, we were going to do something very radical and get rid of advertising completely. So when it comes down to it, we don't do any radio, any TV, any print. We cut off our Yellow Page advertising. And what that allows us to do is give us a budget where we can do certain policies in our store, like we give free tune-ups. And this is something that I don't want to make it sound like a sales pitch, but it's something that I believe in strongly, in that if someone is buying a product, something that they're buying, it can't just be a product that we as Americans generally do and play with it for 10 seconds and throw it away. Mm-hmm. I want it to be something that is part of a lifestyle. And cycling is a lifestyle that enriches someone's health, reduces stress, increases their ability to hang out with their family and friends. It's a very empowering tool. So by offering lifetime service, we're basically saying you buy the bike, we're going to take care of it for you to make sure you ride forever. Beyond policies like that, we spend a lot of our time and our money in terms of staffing costs doing events. So we will do family rides where once a month, the first Sunday of every month, we'll meet up at a shop and we'll cruise around the island with the family. We end with free ice cream at a local place called Tucker's. We'll do classes to get kids off training wheels. We'll do the Jefferson Award mentioned the Books for Bikes, which we do.
Yes, I'm interested in hearing about that also.
So what that is it's a reading program to get kids to really learn to love reading, love cycling, and for me personally, is to get off the TV. I was a latchkey kid growing up, and there's nothing I enjoyed more growing up than to watch TV for 7 hours a day. And I can definitely realize now that it's not something that enriched my life at all. So the goal of getting kids off the TV and especially off the video games is very big for me. We want to get kids exercising. We want them to reduce their diabetes, which is exploding in America. Mm-hmm. We want them to really learn to increase their cognitive learning and to be able to think for themselves.
So how does the reading, what do you offer? How do you get them to read? How do you get them to do this?
Well, what we do is we give an incentive to the kids. We go to all the elementary schools in Alameda, our city. We go to half of them every year. And what we do is we go to the kids and say, okay, we want to get you excited about reading. So what we want you to do is to read outside of your class required reading. Mm-hmm. For every 2.5 hours of reading, you get a raffle ticket. Mm-hmm. And at the end of our program, which is about a month or so at each school, you're able to, we give away a helmet for every grade level, and we give away 2 bikes for every school. So
So the kids want the raffle tickets because you treat it like a raffle, then you pull and you have 2 winners?
Well, we have 8 winners, yes. Six helmet winners, 2 bike winners. Yeah. And actually everyone that participates gets an award. Oh,
nice.
So they all get a prize. And the idea is just to increase the excitement level of cycling and decrease the excitement level of reading.
Do you care what they read? I mean, can they choose?
We don't care what they read.
Do you have a book list or you don't?
Not at all. Uh-huh. The idea is to get kids to read and to enjoy reading on their own. And we feel by doing so, it's going to increase cognitive learning and more than anything else, get people to think for themselves.
Yeah. And something. And the social aspect of it. They learn how to get along with people, I guess.
Absolutely. And it gives them a different motivating tool of getting excited about something that they perhaps wouldn't be excited about. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we really enjoy doing. It's our fourth year doing it. It's something that we hope we'll keep on doing.
And your mother must be thrilled. You know, there's something about having a family business passed down and having it take a new creative turn.
Absolutely.
Is she still part of?
She's part of my life.
Yeah, right, of course. But she's not working still?
No, she's not. The ownership transfer allowed her to finally rest after many, many years of working and, of course, dealing with us two knuckleheads.
You have a knucklehead brother, is that
absolutely.
What does he do?
He actually works for a video game company, and so he's in the other spectrum.
Interesting.
Yeah. He has the other spectrum of life, and it's great. I mean, it's something that the journey that us as a family has lived through,
sure.
I think, has really enriched all of us.
Of course, even the video games. I mean, there's skills to be used. There's manual dexterity, and there's visual speed and
you brought up a good point that there's never anything that's black and white in this world. A video game can be used very positively for education, absolutely, which is actually what my brother's working on.
I was wondering.
Yes. Yeah. I think the main point is that as we are moving along in this world at a faster clip, we're having these tools that are greater than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're getting these tools that really create distractions in our lives and get us to forget about
love. So that's what you want to clip.
Oh, absolutely.
You want to see that part. So balance for certain is...
Absolutely.
And the idea... balance is what you need to ride a bike too.
There you go. The idea of keeping... really the idea that the human soul is more important than anything. Mm-hmm. When you talk about, you know, video game learning, if it's interactive with a child, if that human interaction with your child is happening and the video game is the tool, well, that's wonderful. If that video game becomes the actual parenting device and we lose that parent-to-parent connection, then it all of a sudden becomes an evil tool. Mm-hmm. So it's all about, for me and for what we're trying to do at Alameda Bicycle, it's about enriching the human soul and mm-hmm. to make sure that human interaction never gets lost.
You know, I like the idea of the human interaction part, because there is something about learning respect for rules that, as a cyclist, I mean, there are rules of the road. There are rules of looking out for each other. If somebody goes down, you're there to help.
Right.
You know, so there's...
You're talking about the community aspect of cycling, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with just the idea of getting out of that box. If you're in the car, you're in your world.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on a bike, you're all of a sudden of the world, and you're with people amongst yourselves. And I think just
having... You have to be aware in a way.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. It actually compels you to think outside of yourself. And so when you see someone injured, or even if you see someone with a flat tire... You automatically have compassion towards them because you see yourself in them.
Yes.
And so it's all about always keeping that human interaction and making sure that we always are able to see each other eye to eye. And
do you? I have another question, which is just kind of a personal curiosity. When you're taking kids on rides, or when you're leading these bike rides, obviously they have to wear helmets.
Right.
And are you strict about following the same vehicular rules that cars have to follow? Because I think it goes for all vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely.
In other words, stopping at stop signs and not going through and as part of your training?
Right. Well, I think it's a responsibility for all cyclists because we want to be respected as a true alternative to a motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, we need to start acting accordingly. So absolutely, in all of our rides, and when I ride personally, I make sure that I am a steward, because it's greater than ourselves. This is a movement where we want to get back to the earth. We want to get back to being individuals. And
for
me, a bicycle is an extension of that.
Mm-hmm. It is wonderful to listen to you. Okay, I'm going to shift a little bit, because we are about love letters and putting all this kind of gratitude and love. And again, I'm going to wish it were a television moment so people could see the smile on your face. Who would get your love letter right now?
Well,
I mean, I already want to write to your mother and brother, but you know, this is up to you.
My mother and stepfather Jarell Jung Chung Choi always get my love. But my love letter now and always will be my wife and my soulmate Mina Oh.
Oh, how did you meet her? Tell us quickly.
You know, she actually is younger sisters with one of my best friends.
Uh huh.
So we met through him, but we have always known each other in this life and in previous and in future lives to come.
So this was your meant to be.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so you're once and forever. I'm so happy to hear that. So what is it? Have you ever written her a love letter before?
You know, I think I have.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes, I know I have.
Nice.
But it's never enough. Oh, so I think I'm going to have to write one today.
Okay, so let's start it. Let's just start it here so people can get a feel of how to start yet one more kind of letter. And what is it you think makes a really great love letter? What would you say off the top of your head?
Oh, more than anything else, it's revealing your true emotions outside of the first and second or even third layers.
And how is a good way to do that?
I think the best way to do that is just to write the letter as if you're writing it to yourself and not planning to ever give it to another person.
Oh, well, because you're looking at this dear woman as your true other half, so she's a part of yourself.
Absolutely.
So for you, that would be true. Because not all love letters are romantic or to a sweetheart.
But, you're right.
But in this case, when it is to a sweetheart like this, yes, you are essentially writing to yourself.
I think by having that cognitive dissonance to put it into writing for yourself, you're basically letting go of any inhibitions and allowing that the true emotions to flow out there.
Okay, so truth and honesty, and you're letting yourself know. Now, what about specifics? Specific things about her that you love, which shows that you've been paying attention. and listening.
She knows me and I know her on levels that this earthly dimension cannot even describe.
Oh, well, I believe that. I can see that from your expression. But what can you tell her specifically? Like, what do you want her to know that you love about her? And this can mean physical beauty. This can mean her spirit. And that what memories do you have that illustrate that? So when she reads this letter, she's going to know.
Mina, you make me smile whenever I think of you. You make me really be myself.
Mm-hmm. How does she do that?
She does that by reciprocating the same thing that I give to her. And that's herself... allowing herself to be herself, allowing herself to let her thoughts flow out.
And allowing you to be yourself no matter what road that takes?
Absolutely.
And you can trust her?
That trust is stronger now than it ever has.
So do you want to specify all those things with those kind of words, like trust and...
Trust, honesty, humility.
What are her biggest talents? That are just her now for a minute that don't have
well,
to do
she
with
could,
your
cook. She could cook a mean meal just out of nowhere.
Now, doesn't every person who, like cooking, you know, they say food isn't love, food isn't love. Of course it is.
Food is the main ingredient is love, right?
Yes. It's trying to keep another human being alive.
Absolutely.
In a beautiful way. So if she knows that you're aware of that, and what are your favorite things that she cooks?
Oh.
And does she sing? Does she dance? Does she draw? Any kind of talents?
She has more talents than I can imagine. She is just, I mean, everything about her is, of course, I'm in love.
Yes.
So everything about her is just wonderful to me. She makes me laugh. She makes me smile. She's intelligent beyond belief.
In what way does that show?
Oh, boy. In the amount of critical thinking she has.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay.
Yeah.
So you like her intelligence?
Absolutely.
You feel comfortable that you can trust somebody who's that intelligent?
Absolutely.
You're not leaving your hands you're not leaving your life in the hands of some dunderhead. That's important. That's very important
right.
in life. So if she says something to you, do you listen to her? Do you trust it right away?
Well, I have a problem of being Korean, so my pride sometimes beats me in the head a couple of times, but I do listen to her.
That's being Korean. That's different than just being a guy? I'm curious.
It's kind of like being a guy on steroids.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, Koreans are Asian Irish people, so you can imagine we drink, smoke, and fight. So we have a little bit of pride in us, but more than anything else, I definitely trust her with her intelligence, and eventually comes through.
That's really nice. And you've got a baby who's how old now?
I've got a Marley who's 3 years old. Hi, Marley.
Oh,
and I've got an Isabel that's almost 7 months old.
Oh, so when you have it, I see. I thought that new baby was your first. How lovely.
Isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Okay, so let me ask you another question that I always kind of like is, what kind of stationery will you use?
What kind of stationery will I use?
There you go, yeah.
Oh,
see,
boy.
Sometimes people don't think about that.
You're
but
right.
Isn't that the gift wrap?
You're right. You know, I think I have to make my own card now.
Good, okay.
Yeah.
And when you talk about a card, by the way.
I think we're going to get a nice, you know, big card stock, you know, maybe, I'm thinking fuchsia.
Lovely.
Yeah, maybe a little calligraphy action going on, yeah.
Do you do calligraphy?
I did back when I used to think I was romantic, yeah.
Nice. You still are, apparently. So the envelope and the stationery says something. It's like the first hello, because you're going to choose something that either is representative of her, that you know she likes, or some color or style that's you.
Right.
And either way is good. It's, you know, if you do something that is your favorite color and your style, it's when she sees that envelope, she'll know who it is. That's the first hello. And you want paper that's going to last forever. Because you want Marley's grandchildren to be able to see this.
Very true.
You've got an important history.
Very true. Yeah, I think we're going to have to go with the custom card. Because
what does that mean? You mean a card that you buy like...
No, a card. I got to buy that card stock and make it myself.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Custom
that,
made. Mm-hmm.
That will show the amount of love that I'm making in the card.
It does. Because this is a gift custom designed by you. For one person.
Darn right.
So you've taken your life from kind of a more amorphous corporate world to something intimate and personal in your work life and the way you live your life, right?
Right.
So a love letter wouldn't be a one-shot deal, right?
Right.
In other words, you may have more to tell her that you can put on one piece of paper, or that with two little children, she's going to have time to read.
Right.
Maybe you want to do one a year.
I think it's... it's incumbent upon me to show her every day with every single time I'm with her.
Yes. But as far as putting something in writing that she'll have forever, so long after you're gone.
Well, you know, things are very, very serendipitous in life, and having this interview has reminded me again that I need to write down to her exactly how I feel. So I do appreciate that.
And so she'll have it forever, and your grandchildren will know that they come from a long line of love that is worth emulating.
Absolutely.
And it means that they're really privileged people. You know, it's like coming from royalty, coming from somebody who knows how to love, don't you think?
I'm shaking my head because that's exactly right. It's not about money, it's about love. And it always comes back to
and
that.
And the stating of it so that people will have it for sure.
Absolutely.
Because you can, you know, we can feel a lot. We can feel a lot of love and gratitude and forget to mention it or forget to write it down in our own handwriting. Because that's gold when those children of yours will see it when they're grown. They're going to know something about their father that's really important and about their mother, that she was the kind of woman who warranted this kind of passion and love.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this up. It's something that I look forward to do, actually, as soon as I get out of here.
I'm glad. Okay. And you'll mail it to her?
I will.
Okay. So that she can read it in private?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
You don't want her to have to feel that she has to respond right away. You know, people sometimes take a while.
I have a feeling this is not your first love letter interview.
No, it's not.
I'm learning quite a bit here.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad. It's so worth doing. I want to thank you very much for coming and sharing with us what you do and how you got there and your sensibilities. It's just a ray of light and a real teaching to others, which is what I like for this program. You know, that we all learn something about how to be. And I have one quick question. Did you not learn, because I remember this as a child, that we learned very specifically that every great fortune starts with a great crime. They didn't tell you that at Berkeley? They forgot? I mean, that these people that we look...
I think they're more about every great crime becomes a fortune,
oh,
and then you're
too.
A great man.
That happens also, I guess. Okay, well, thank you, dear, very much for coming to join us. It's been a real pleasure.
Likewise, thank you.
And this is Janet Allen saying goodbye, and we will see you soon. And please remember that if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion that I hope you get to do and enjoy. Bye.